I am not going to assume that I'm teaching and preaching to the choir on this sermon because it's controversial, and I understand that. But I'm also not going to pretend that I'm going to be fair and balanced because I'm afraid that Al Franken will sue me for stealing his satire of Fox's completely non-truthful advertising about being fair and balanced. I picked the subject of gay marriage long before this big controversy came up and the Episcopalians, excuse me, became the Episcopalians with the elevation of Canon Robinson to Bishop Robinson. And I got to tell you, I don't get it. I mean, that's not a manipulative rhetorical, I don't get it. That's a real, I don't get it. There are lots of gay Episcopal priests. I went to school with many of them. There are lots of gay Episcopal canons and bishops. Some of the ones I went to school with have become canons and bishops. There are gay priests, we know that, and cardinals, we know that. There are gay rabbis out of the closet, and we know that, and gay imams in the closet, and we can infer that. There are gay gurus. The question is not, are gay people going to be elevated in the church, in the synagogue, in the mosques? The question, and it's a legitimate question that every religious congregation should be asking itself, is, are you going to absolutely demand dishonesty of your clergy? Because that's the essential Episcopalian position. It's don't ask, don't tell, and if you say anything, lie to us, please. This usually is not in the ordination services. Now, in not being fair and balanced, I will tell you that since the year 1970, I have performed same-sex unions. So my position on this is very clear, and I don't simply talk the talk. I walk the walk. It is not my experience that there is too little love in the world, that we should sit in judgment on it. It is my experience there isn't enough love in the world. And so when we find it, when people are committed to each other in loving and helpful and supportive ways, I am all for celebrating that. So in acknowledging the danger of doing anything that has a melody to it, here's to you, Bishop Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Oh, 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 oh. I don't understand. I don't understand the issue. I don't understand the harm. When a couple came to me in 1970 and said, we love each other and we know it's not legal in the state of California, but would you conduct a service so that we can say before God, they were not from a Unitarian background, but that we were the only game in town, that we can say before our sensibility of God that we love each other and will support each other and intend to work together seriously and lovingly, that we want to grow old together. I didn't agonize very much about saying yes. I like a party. It's the planning that's tough. The party's fun. It's paying for it that's tough. But the party's fun. And I thought that, frankly, the whole topic bordered on being a little silly. But it is also true that sex and sexuality are part of the, well, it's not really an unholy trinity, it's an unholy quad of subjects that make people very uncomfortable, and we don't really want to talk about them in, no irony intended, in a straight manner. So we make jokes. We make jokes about sex and sexuality, about toilet function, about death and about money. Those are our taboo subjects. I'm not going to deal with money. That's for the congregational meeting afterwards. I'm only dealing with death, sex, and toilets. Because these are universal human experiences. Almost all of us were born as the result of a sex act. I know, we don't want to think about our parents doing it. We don't want to think about our children doing it. But you know something? We're all here. QED. There might be a test tube baby here. There might be a test tube or petri baby downstairs. But, you know, even then, there was something going on. So, and in the great words of the gay minister, get over it. These are universal human experiences. But people worry about slippery slopes. We're always worried about slippery slopes. If we say yes to gay marriage, won't that lead to group sex? Well, no. That's called college. And strangely enough, the military, if you're looking for promiscuity. No, there is no slippery slope here. But isn't that going to lead to incest and rape and molestation? That's changing the subject. Most incest and rape and molestation are done by straight people who are bent but not gay. Well, how about bestiality then? No, thank you, not today. That's completely changing the subject, and I don't think that any religious conservative really is going to hold the position that gay marriage is going to create a demand on clergy to perform weddings between people and household pets. I mean, I have been doing gay and holy unions for over 30 years, and no one has asked me to do any service involving a household pet. Now, leaving household pets in a will is a whole other issue, but and that does go on, but there isn't a slippery slope here. There is a recognizing the facts of life. And the facts of life may be the same as they were in ancient and biblical days, but the facts of living are not. How did the clergy get involved in weddings anyway? A good question. I'm sure you're asking that yourself. A wedding, a marriage, is a property agreement. That's what it is. You are saying, we are married to each other. There are going to be assumptions that the children of this, the usufruct of the moiety, the children of this partnership will be the mothers and the fathers, that there will be rights of inheritance, there will be rights of how people are maintained. When you sign a marriage contract in the Jewish tradition, it's a ketubah, and it is a contract. It really isn't a religious ceremony. When you sign a marriage license and that license is granted by the state through a city, it really is a contract. How did the clergy get involved? Well, for a long time, we were the only ones that could write and read. So we drew up the contracts and we witnessed the contracts and said, yeah, I will certify that these two people, more or less free of compulsion, other than parental and biological, wanted to be married to each other on this date, I so swear and affirm. That's how we got into it. In order to justify our fees, we added a little bit of incense, some music, maybe a blessing or two, and the catering industry was born. And we can talk about the morality or immorality of the catering industry, but the clergy got involved simply to witness the fact that these two people wanted to be married to each other. What is the state interest in saying no to this kind of agreement? Once upon a time, the issues of inheritance for same-sex friendships, partnerships, weren't particularly an issue. You could, by will and testament, leave your property to someone. But it's a more complex world now for several reasons. One, children are an issue. Gay people and lesbians, gay males and lesbians, have children. They adopt children, they use in vitro, they use all kinds of techniques, and there are children and inheritance issues. There are issues of how do we take care of each other when a partner is sick and in the hospital. Who has the right to come and visit, to make the life and death calls, to make the arrangements for the funeral? Does a parent who's been alienated from their gay child for 30 years step in and grab the body from the partner of 25 years? Today, that happens all too often, and that's outrageous in my view. There are also insurance benefits and pension benefits. Is it in society's interest not simply to have clergy lie to their congregations, but to have people lie to each other and the world in general? When I was a student many years ago in Vienna, there were thousands of war widows who were devout Catholics and living in emotional turmoil because although they were widowed, they could not marry the men that they had partnered up with because they would have lost their widow's pension. So the state was actually creating an impediment to honesty. We have divorce, spousal support, pension issues, all of which work against the family values of what is essentially a conservative institution, which is marriage. Where is the compelling need for society, however conservative, to do this? What is the harm that is created to society? The slippery slope, I don't take that seriously. Role modeling to children. Okay, let's talk about it. What if you have two aunts and they're living together? Or two uncles and they're living together? Won't the children be confused? Let's go back to the third paragraph of the sermon. The children are also confused and don't want to deal with adult sexuality anyway. It's yucky. They can't picture anybody other than themselves doing it. So, yes, they'll be confused. It's the state of childhood to be confused. Well, maybe the state of adulthood also to be confused. So what? Well, won't they think that gay people just want to be, that it's okay? Yeah. There was a large emergency congregational meeting at a Unitarian Universalist church in Southern California over the issue of whether they should rent their sanctuary to a metropolitan gay church. And one of the big issues was, but the gay church is going to bring gay people into our congregation, and they're going to use the toilets. There were already gay people in the congregation, just not comfortable enough to be in a religious and hopefully safe community who they were. The issue is not, is there gay marriage? The issue is not, are there gay people? There are. Is it a slippery slope? Does having two uncles living together, two aunts living together, having friends living together as loving partners, is that going to entice our children into being gay? Not unless they're gay. Not unless they're gay. Almost all gay people had straight parents. And almost all of the gay people I know who have had and adopted children have straight children. You know, it's a very interesting position that a lot of the heterosexual community takes, or as the gay community says, a lot of breeders take, and that is being gay must be so extraordinarily wonderful, I'm sorry, fabulous, that just being exposed en passant to a gay couple is enough to make your children gay. Well, my gay math teacher did not pass on either his sexuality or his knowledge of math to me. These are not things that happen just kind of passing through a classroom or passing through somebody's living room. Who we are sexually is much deeper than that. And you know something? I almost don't know anyone who picks their sexuality by choice, except for gay people who feel the pressure to pass. Is there gay marriage? Yeah, gay people get married all the time, and it's a tragedy when they marry straight people in order to pass and have children and lead double lives like conversos and Milanos in Spain in the 13th and 14th century. That's not a good thing, in my view. Well, isn't our John? I hear somebody thinking. I won't name you. I hear somebody thinking, aren't you just promoting the gay agenda? Yes. There's a gay agenda. I got a copy. Gay agenda, and incidentally, that's not quite true. There are three gay agendas. There's the, four, actually. There are four gay agendas. There's the male gay agenda. There's the female gay agenda. There's the bisexual gay agenda. And there's the transgender gay agenda. They all share one thing in common, and that is the fourth clause. I only got a copy of the male gay agenda. And it says, first we'll call a meeting, then we'll redecorate the room because we just can't go on like this. There will be a group sing-along, and Streisand is the first choice, but we will tolerate, because it shows you the kind of tolerance in the gay community, Judy Garland or Bette Midler. And the fourth and the universal part of the gay agenda is treat us as human beings. No more, no less. Treat us as your beloved community. No more, no less.